General policy. Subject state bond rating, date 2/25/70. Mr. Real will be the first to speak. This is side A. Tape number one.
I extend our sincere appreciation to you for taking the time to talk about this.
Well, I didn't realize that I was going to be invited to speak to such a large audience. It's a very fine opportunity, and I'm overwhelmed. I'm not here today to mind your business and tell you how to run it. I'm only here because I think it's that more of a long-term, like a place of stress and something like that. I was in the trading business for 17 years with these investors. And so that I've had a period of 17 years to study the credit of the state of Alaska, both as a territory and as a state government. I'm an admirer of the state of Alaska. I think that your land and resources here are truly unique, wonderful. We have nothing else like it in this country. You also have some awesome problems that go with it from the standpoint of developing your state, developing your resources. And these problems, I suppose, are going to undoubtedly require considerable investment in capital. Unfortunately, over the years, I think that to some extent, your people have been exploited when it comes to borrowing money. I think you've paid an exorbitant amount for capital funds to start. I suppose that the exploration developments on the North Slope are going to have big amount to do with the realization down in the other 49 states that Alaska is coming of age. But there's a tremendous amount of work to be done in enhancing and polishing your credit image. I was very interested to see that you have a bill which proposes to set up a bond bank, that you propose to work with your underlying governmental jurisdictions and help them to improve their credit. I also see that you intend to guarantee their indebtedness to step into the breach in the event that they default, which I think is very commendable. On the other hand, I detect some weaknesses in that bill, which convince me that its present form is not going to work.
Tell us what bill? Right number, which bill, sir?
Well, I guess that I have a copy here of Senate Bill number 453. Introduced on the 3rd of this month.
Mr. Chairman, not to interrupt, but could we get copies of that so that he's trying to discuss the bill so they know what we're talking about?
Sure. Jimmy, would you, is that the complete package of the...
I couldn't take it, sir, because this was, as you sent me, it's in that form. That's the only thing I
bring. Julie, you better make a notation of these numbers because you'll have to get service. Are you going to be commenting on the permanent bank concept at all?
Yes, I am.
404. You're going to be talking about collateralization. 403.
I was going to mention the bill because I think the bill is certainly integral part of the state credit as it exists today. It's a very fine effort to improve the credit of the state and all its underlying jurisdictions. I am well acquainted with the bond bank concept. I serve with that fee as a member of the Debt Advisory Committee in the state of New Jersey. We are a small group from the street that advises the legislature. We were first introduced to this bill sometime in November of 1968. As a committee, we criticized the bill because the bond bank concept, as it's been evoked both in Washington, the federal government, as the Virgin Mary, you're probably aware of that, and in New Jersey, and they're both identical in concept, looks for the Congress of the United States in the instance of the federal legislation and to the legislature of the state of New Jersey, in the instance of New Jersey, to capitalize the bank. And it also looks to the legislature in New Jersey to see to it that the bank is kept capitalized. That obligation is a moral obligation of the legislature. The governor in the New Jersey bill and your bill is empowered to actually put the legislature on notice as of a certain date as to what would be needed to make the bank whole. This is on an annual basis. The state of New Jersey's credit is AAA, and one would think that a bank might work very well in New Jersey, but the state itself is a AAA credit. But we might just look at the parallel situation in the state of New York, which is also a AAA credit, which has two major public authorities operating as banks. One is a financial institution to provide monies for privately owned colleges and universities, and also for state-owned colleges and universities. There's about $1 billion worth of indebtedness outstanding in New York State in this particular area, which means it's been marketing bonds for a period of about 25 years. Because of the nature of the moral obligation, the investor has no legal call on the legislature, cannot mandamus the legislature to appropriate. The bank, in the instance of New York State, borrows money at much the same price that the state of Alaska borrows money on its own general obligations. And this necessity narrows the scope of influence of the bank, also narrows its usefulness. The bank has to borrow at BAA and BA prices in the bond market. It can only lend to institutions that have no credit stature. The same thing would happen in New Jersey, and it was for that reason that we as a committee advised the legislature that this legislation was not going to provide a workable bank. And it has not provided a workable bank. One of my own clients, which is a high school district in the southern part of New Jersey, would like to borrow from the bank and can't. The bank has made no loans, even though there's been a tremendous amount of value about the bank. And I submit to you that you're in the same position. But I think it's probably more serious here in Alaska because you, as a state, giving recognition to your traditional market position, the cost at which you traditionally borrow money, would be borrowing for your own state general obligations, actually at the same price that this bond bank borrows in the state of New York, which is a AAA credit. It would almost rule out the banking function here in Alaska, almost rule out the usefulness of the bank. It's ruled it out in New Jersey, and New Jersey's credit stature is at the other end of the credit spectrum. Now, you have a section in here which proposes to guarantee I think your guarantee is a very fine idea, but I also point out that your legislative machinery here actually does not provide a guarantee, because there again it looks to the legislature to recognize its obligation to appropriate in the final analysis. And that is not a guarantee. So you're falling short of the mark. And I always submit that if you do want a guarantee, that you'll have to beat that provision up. I don't criticize it, this concept. I think the concept is fine. So we have another provision in the bottom bank here, which I think is a fine one, and that is that you propose to provide financial advice to your underlying jurisdictions, to your cities, to your towns, to your schools. And I think that internalism is very fine. I think it's going to do a lot for your credit, your state credit over the long term. But I ask one question, in all sincerity. And that the state has not been able to solve some of its own problems in borrowing money. How is the state equipped to help with subdivisions overcome a benefit problem? Now, my criticism is only intended as constructive criticism. And I only mean to point out that while you have a very fine piece of legislation, basic legislation, it needs some remedial action here to truly make it effective. I may have said too much, and I may not have put my points across. If it's appropriate, I'd like to answer questions.
You'll have plenty of them for whenever you go out of steam. Gentlemen, longer thoughts.
I think the obvious question is, what specifically do we do to make the bill useful?
Well, moral obligations as such have never been accepted in the money market. A guarantee, a big guarantee, actually has to give the investor the right to mandate the legislative body to do something. The investor here has no claim on the legislature at all. We only have to go back to 1959 and 1960 in the states of Michigan and Pennsylvania to see instances where the legislature chose to embarrass the governor by refusing to appropriate.
Oh, that would never happen.
Well, I don't say it would never happen. It's unlikely to happen, Mr. Phillips, but it can happen. And I'm certainly not going to tell you that it's going to happen in Alaska. But I want to point out, because it has happened, and it's happened within very recent history, it's happened within the past 10 years in two fairly wealthy and affluent states, the investor rightly says it can happen anywhere.
I think specifically, though, what can we do in terms that I understand, and if I understand, I'm sure everybody will. What can we do to make our, what can we do in the way of legislation or policy here to make our bonds carry a better rating? How can we get a better rating in the state of Alaska? If this thing doesn't work, then what does work? How do we do it?
Well, obviously, if you're going to run a bank so that you can borrow money and loan it to your subdivisions, obviously you want to borrow it far cheaper than they can borrow it, so that you can turn it over to them and charge them a very modest fee for administration. And I would point out that in many instances, the state is going to be able to borrow money at approximately the identical rate that many of your subdivisions would borrow at. So that would obviate the need for a bank.
All right. Supposing this isn't the thing to do and we just set this aside, what then can this committee do in the way of legislation or a policy approach? And just forget this bill for a minute. You said this bill won't do it. All right, well, let's assume that and throw it away. Then what do we do? We've got to be creative enough here in this committee, in the House committee, to do whatever is necessary to make our bond rating better in the state of Alaska. So you tell us what we do.
I think that's the crux of the problem. And I don't say that this bill won't work. this bill can work with some modification, and also with concurrent work to improve your credit statute. I think one of the biggest things that could be done here to improve the credit of the state of Alaska would be to analyze your capital needs, looking ahead over the short term and over the long term. I think that you have to come up with a 20-year blueprint. That's a pretty safe span of time. I think you have to set and establish priorities as to what you are going to need capital for in the way of building improvements to your people, building your educational system, transportation, communication, civil. And I think you're going to have to relate your financial resources to those capital needs once you've established priorities. You may have to overhaul your revenue sources. You may have to develop some new ones. I wouldn't be surprised but what you would. Every state, I think, is in that position today. I emphasize the importance of doing this because the investor always wants to know what is ahead of him, both short and long term, from the standpoint of dilution through the occurrence of additional debts. I think that's a good point of departure for the state. It should be done.
Before you go on to that question, when you talk about a 20-year capital needs projection, do you talk about the capital needs of the state of Alaska, or do you talk about the state of Alaska plus its political subdivisions?
Well, I'm talking about the state initially. And then I would draw upon a section of your bond bank concept here, which I think is excellent. And that is the idea that the state exercise paternalism and stand ready to help and guide its underlying jurisdictions and get them started on doing the same thing for themselves, so that you can coordinate two programs.
Is there anything else then besides the 20-year plan?
Well, this is rather a large order. It's rather a large undertaking.
But then will that in itself bring our rating, will it improve our rating, that in itself, or do we have to do something else?
Well, you have to. That involves I suppose many things. It is going to put the investor on notice that the state is sophisticated, the state is doing long-term planning, the state has a blueprint and knows just what it has to proceed on. It has to be bipartisan. The state has established goals that have to be attained, but importantly, it knows how it's going to attain it. From the standpoint of the economic growth of the thing, just how it's going to be. So that these capital needs are going to be programmed. You know how much money you're going to borrow in the market every year. You know how you're going to support it financially. You can give the investor, as well as yourselves here, as the governing body of the state, assurance that you're going to live within your means. It's the beginning of building credit in the eyes of investors. Planning is a very important adjunct of that. And with it comes the coordination of capital programs in all the underlying jurisdictions. Now, once you start doing that, you can make a bank such as you propose here work. You have to tighten up some of the provisions here. I don't criticize the bill from the standpoint of content. I think it's excellent, but there's some things you have to do to make it really workable. And as you get started in building your own credit stature, you can make this bond bank very workable, because within a relatively short span of time, you will be paying less for the cost of capital money as you borrow it. Because you do pay less for it, you will be able to function truly as a bank and lend it to your smaller underlying jurisdictions which do not have credit statute. You're going to be able to do a lot for them in an advisory capacity. You're building the machinery that is doing it. I really say that if you propose to help others run their households, that the proper thing to do is to get your own in order first.
I understand what you're saying, but you're talking essentially about the one idea that we should have a 20-year plan. This plan should include methods of financing, sources of revenue, the whole business. Now, will that in itself then give us a AAA rating on the bond market?
No, that's not necessarily going to give you a AAA rating. It's going to take you time to build credit. I would hope that it would get you an improvement in rating by one gradation almost immediately as soon as you effect such a program, because it's certainly putting the investment community on notice that you have come of age and you are ready to step forward with a programmed progress.
But the existence of a permanent fund of, say, for example, $900 million put away in a permanent fund have any effect whatsoever on the bond market as far as our ratings are concerned? Interesting.
Well, it could have. I wouldn't advocate that you put $900 million away. I don't think that's necessary. I think you can set up the mechanics of a guarantee bond, such as you've started here, where, as I understand it, reading the Act, you would provide the investor with assured protection that you would have a fund on hand which was going to equal five times the amount of the indebtedness outstanding in the state and all of its underlying jurisdictions, if I read it correctly, from the standpoint of annual debt service.
I'm referring principally to Senate Bill 404.
Can I interject, Senator? Mr. Real, for your edification, sir, the committee is charged with the duty of examining and perhaps passing out a bill which would create a permanent fund, much like a permanent trust fund, with an annual withdrawal of capital appreciation and income of 5%. In other words, a trust in perpetuity for the benefit of all Alaskans here and those to come. And the legislation we have before us merely would divert the capital appreciation and income into the general fund. There's no reason that any of us are aware right now why we couldn't allocate a portion of that to secure a guarantee, if you will. I think this is probably coming at you cold, and I think that's...
Well, I wasn't aware of that. No. The only thing I've seen is 453, which is the bond bank. I urge you to do one thing, and that is, if you truly wish to guarantee, it could be possible that the only way that you can effectuate a guarantee is by doing it through a vote of the people. It has to be done through referendum to make it truly a general obligation of the state. Because as a moral obligation of the legislature, it is not in effect a guarantee in the eyes of investors. Now, there are many ways to guarantee. The state of New Hampshire, as you're probably aware, through state referendum, has the power to guarantee bond issues of underlying jurisdictions that do not enjoy a credit statute. And it's been doing that now for some long span of time, probably 20 years at least. The state of California, as you are also aware, aids its school district by selling general obligations to the state and turning the money over to the school districts when they repay the state. The state of Michigan has an act that says that any school bond which is not honored and serviced upon presentation to the paying agent when principal and interest comes due will be serviced at the office of the state treasurer. That is a guarantee. There are many guarantee mechanisms which are workable. In fact, I think you're limited only by ingenuity in devising one of your own. But I do warn you about one thing. Do not set up a device which relies upon the legislature's recognition of its moral obligation to its appropriate, because that is not, in the eyes of investors, a guarantee. And it will not work in the bond market. You won't say the nickel.
What other things can we do now? Our object is to get the... Is AAA the best bond rating there is?
AAA is...
All right, then that's our objective. We want to get that about maybe 60 days from now. Well, what do we do? What do we do besides your suggestion on the thing? This is our objective. Now, what other things do we have to do?
Well, in my opinion, we're going to be many, many years in attaining a AAA rating. On the other hand, I may be wrong. You may have... tremendous succession of discoveries of mineral resources which are going to give you real affluence. That's very possible, it's certainly not impossible. But barring those, AAA rating is something that you are able to spend time. We as individuals have to build our individual credit ratings. It takes time. So that I would...
What determines the credit rating? This I don't understand. If we got to know what the problem is before we can solve it. So you put down some letters, and I don't know what BAA means or any of those things, except I know what we've got is lower than what we want. And what determines whether we get AAA or whether we get what we've got now? Is this an arbitrary decision by somebody?
No, it is not arbitrary. It's a decision that's made by a group of people who are supposedly knowledgeable about the evaluation. The rating is determined by a committee. A state which has a AAA rating is one which has capital needs which are rather moderate in terms of its financial resources. It has no particular need to borrow a tremendous amount of money. Or, putting it conversely, its resources existing in potential are tremendous in terms of its immediate debt and its long-term prospective debt. Usually it is it's a mature entity, its economy is mature, its capital plant is pretty mature. It doesn't have any tremendous long-term capital needs. I worked with the state of South Carolina a couple of years ago on doing a rather unique study. We did a 25-year blueprint for them. They have had, and do have today, a AAA rating. They were concerned about keeping it. And their immediate concern was how to increase the per capita income of the people of South Carolina, because they were looking years ahead and they were worried about their cash flow standpoint of state taxes and so on. They wanted to be assured that revenues, sales and income tax and so on were going to be adequate to keep their capital plant in good shape, keep it modernized. So they looked at per capita income, which was one of the lowest in the 50 states, and talked to us about it. And we told them that we thought one of the first things they should do is they overhaul their educational system. Starting from first grade, going right on through their institutions of higher education. They did not have a compulsory school attendance law in South Carolina. For that reason, by the ninth grade, they lost 52% of their students. So we looked at their problem through education, and education as a utility, and convinced them that by investing more in education, they would get it out within a short span of time and increased sales and income taxes. That was the beginning. We looked at all of their needs. We looked at their highway program. We were rather surprised to find that the mortality rate of infants in South Carolina was the highest in the nation. We set up a system of rural clinics for them and used medical students in their senior year to be leave of absence and staff. We found the money to make this work. We updated their highway program. I only say this to point out that even a state with a AAA rating sometimes falls behind. I happen to have a study with me right at the moment. I put it in my case yesterday afternoon that you might be interested in. But it's not a question always of just improving the rating, it's a question of keeping the rating you have so that you don't slide back. But a state's credit rating is no different from a credit rating assigned to business enterprise or to a private individual.
But what are some of the specific things that go to determine what is our rating in the state of Alaska?
It's BAA by Moody's, and triple D is Standard & Poor's, and they're one of the same.
All right, then how did we get that rating? Why, what is there about the state of Alaska that gives us that rating instead of AAA as an example? What can, what's our problem?
I think your problem is, Ben, that you are caught up in the rather overwhelming problem of transition from a territory to a state. You have problems here that no other state in the United States has.
Like what?
A tremendous geographical area, so communication and transportation is expensive. The population centers are separated by great distances, which means that potentially you're going to have to make a tremendous investment here just in transportation in the state. The investor recognizes this fact and is convinced that you're going to have to pour a tremendous amount of money into capital improvements in the state. And for that reason, as he looks at your per capita debt here, which is already very high, he sees little hope that it's going to decrease in the near future. So the next thing he asks for is your capital program, just what are you going to spend money on? How quickly are you going to do it? How do you have the wherewithal to retire the amount of debt that you retire now and the amount of debt that you'll have to retire in the future? And he comes away convinced, just doing a little thumbnail analysis. He's not certainly delving into this thing very deeply, but he comes away with a conviction that your debt is very high and it's going to stay very high. His conviction is backed up and supported by the rating agencies, whether it's Dun & Brad, Moody's, or Standard & Poor. They all concur that you have resources here which give everyone a conviction that you're going to have tremendous wealth potentially. But in the meantime, you have a tremendous amount of indebtedness. You're left with a tremendous amount of indebtedness in the future. And probably only a moderate amount of revenue to both run your plant and to retire your debt.
We have before us now approximately $150 million worth of proposed bond issues that we're supposed to decide on. What effect what effect on our bond rating would there be if we pass these out and vote on them and put them on the ballot and they're voted? What will that do to our rating?
Well,
besides show that we get guts.
Might do two things. If we put those out as part of a capital program, everyone would say, well, here, we knew this was coming. This is what they're going to do this year, and we know what they're going to do next year, and so on. So that we have confidence that the state of Alaska is going to live within its means. It's going to build its capital plan so that it can build its economy. And there's going to be a real return on all of this capital investment. The state government, in terms of its capital plan, is just like a utility. You've got to make an investment and then you get a return. On the other hand, if you don't have a plan, don't have a program, you just come to market with $150 million this year and a like amount next year and so on, typically the investor says, well, I told you so. The state of Alaska is always in the market. They're always borrowing. And they ask themselves, well, how is the state going to retire this debt? Not this year or next year, but 15 years from now, if they're over 15-year maturity or a 20-year maturity. And more important, they're rather awed by the price that you're paying for money. You're probably paying more for money than any other jurisdiction except a speculative revenue enterprise in one of the other 49 states.
Well, if they change their rating, wouldn't we pay less for the money?
I could assure you that you would pay less. You have got to build investor confidence. That's your biggest problem, I think, right now.
Representative Redding.
Mr. Real, you mentioned Alaska's tremendous problems that are ahead of it.
such as transportation, communication, and so forth. Considering the problems that Alaska doesn't have, such as the other states might have, for example, California, New York, problems of, that are already with them that they haven't yet solved, pollution, traffic, slums, problems that almost beggar the imagination, that and yet they their problems in relation to ours are so immense that isn't there something that weighs against them in this regard?
Yes, there is. I was thinking of those as I came up here this morning, that Alaska really is a wonderful place to live. I was thinking that from my own point of view, that coming from the New York metropolitan area where we have all of those problems that you allude to, and God knows when they'll ever be solved, everything just gets worse. You have many attributes here which make Alaska tremendously attractive. Not only as a place to live, but to industry and to the investor. And those are things that you will have to emphasize through a program of financial public relations. You should, by all means, capitalize on this. And I think the lack of financial public relations is also one of your important problems, and it's one of those things that you'll have to do to improve your credit image. I talked about borrowing costs here. I'm sorry, I didn't come equipped to talk to a large group where I brought copies. I can have copies in the mail next week and buy them if you'd like to see them. But actually, these are the costs of money by bond maturity to investors from the various rating categories, from AAA, which is the top, all the way down to BA, which is the bottom. And Alaska runs between our BAA group, as we show it here, and the BA group, which is down at the bottom of the spectrum. Maybe you'd like to pass this around. This is taken from an analysis of bond sales every
you
week.
Mind, sir, we could have it produced while you're chatting.
Well, I would give that copy to the committee. As I say, I should have come prepared to talk to a group of this size. I've had them with
me. Further, Mr. Real, as you have indicated, and many have indicated, that one of our problems is we do not have a stable and large industrial base to support future activities of the state. And now with industrial development out of phase with current fads, how can we overcome this phase of our problem?
Well, your economy from an industrial standpoint is one that is attractive into the present, right at the present time. You haven't done much in the area of fabrication. I don't think that that is terribly injurious, because you don't have a population here with a tremendous volume of unemployed and so on. You don't have to worry about creating jobs. And that is something that I would suspect would take care of itself. I don't know that it's terribly important that resources are extracted here and fabricated elsewhere. If they were to be fabricated here, you would need a larger capital plant. You would need far more in the way of schools and highways and all the other improvements of sophisticated society. I don't think the lack of fabricating industry is in any way injurious to you, but that's just my opinion.
We have at the present time bonded debt that requires debt service of about $10 to $11 million a year, and we're proposing approximately to double it this year. We're authorized to double it this year, and probably add another $12 million a year to our debt service. Can we, if we found a way of financing that without going to market and didn't borrow for the next 2 years or 3 years, would that give us a plus insofar as this?
It would be a very temporary plus. On the other hand, I suppose it might give you period here in which you could reassess all of your needs, problems, and do something about it. On the other hand, I think you've got to make a decision as to whether you want to use that money and invest it directly in capital improvements, or whether you want to invest that money in such a way that it can backstop your existing and future indebtedness through any capital devices.
We have in the other house a proposal to establish a general obligation bond guarantee fund, recognizing that our present debt plus the proposed debt that is going to take around 20 to 21 million a year. This fund is suggested at $100 million to guarantee against the default of current bonds as well as future bonds, with a, I believe, a pledge of the first revenue from the permanent fund to replace any amount that is ever called upon to meet a default. Does that have any merit in this scheme of things?
Well, I suppose it's
a direct dollar guarantee.
Yes, that's true. But I think it also has some demerits. I think that you can accomplish the same thing and really guarantee without tying up any money, provided you stand ready to generate the required revenue so that you'll have it when you need it. If you were to earmark a certain portion of a tax which is already in existence, or if you were to earmark the proceeds of a tax which might be voted into existence, which you might not use or might keep on a standby basis, you could accomplish the same thing without tying up funds.
Well, assuming we don't want to go straight into taxes, present time, as you probably aware, we have a prohibition against dedication of tax revenues in the Constitution. Say you can do the same thing without tying up money. What can we do if we do tie up money?
Well, I only need to point out that as money is tied up and is invested, it's not generally productive. You can take the income from it, but you can't lose the principal. And I would assume that you would have a great variety of needs in which you could use that principal amount, that $100 million. And I just question whether, if the state really wants to put a general obligation pledge behind, or guarantee behind the indebtedness of any one of its subdivisions, it really has to do it through a statewide referendum. It doesn't have to tie up a nickel's worth of money.
Well, this just relates to the state general obligation.
Well, the same thing would apply to the state then. If I don't want to urge you to put a vast sum of money aside. $100 million is a pretty significant amount of money. Just to guarantee state debt. One of the first things it does is raise the question of just what is the matter with Alaska's general obligations that the state itself thinks that it has to put a guarantee in. They've been accepted in the market all this time. Doesn't it raise some questions of suspicion? I would urge that you look to a meaningful guarantee device from the standpoint of a recital. And the machinery behind it to allow the state to come up with money if and when it's needed. But it doesn't have to have a big reservoir of money standing idle.
Don't we have that now in the very terms of our bonds where the full faith and credit of the state is pledged?
You do. You do.
What additional can we pledge besides that?
Well, the only thing you can do is to do what you have just mentioned, and that's have a big reservoir of money on hand. Actually, the principal amount being idle, of course, it's going to be invested, it's going to generate money, which you can use for other purposes. But I'm not sure that is the way. In fact, I doubt that is the way to immediately enhance your credit. I think that credit enhancement is going to have to come through the confidence that comes from long-range planning program. The fact that you have been visionary enough to assess your needs and to establish long-term goals and decide just how you're going to attain them.
Well, here we are in a whole new ballgame from what we had in the past. All of a sudden, we got a surplus of $900 million. We got in 1 year. You say, let's not tie this up to ensure the future of the state, but in any amount. But you say, well, if we set this aside now, we're looked upon with suspicion. Something the matter with our Commons. But having fell heir to a $900 million all of a sudden, aren't we going to be looked upon with greater suspicion if we don't do something about to ensure our future bond credit?
I don't believe that you are expected to establish a guarantee bond. Let me take you back about 14 years, to 1955 in the state of Michigan, where they set up the School Bond Act, whereby the state set up a $100 million guarantee fund to guarantee all of the school bonds in the state of Michigan. And this was going to enhance their credit overnight. It was going to put a credit floor under the lowliest school bond outstanding in the state of Michigan. I was going to say there are a couple of examples. There are a couple of school districts with almost 100% legal population in the Detroit metropolitan area. And immediately, Inkster school bonds were going to trade at least at A prices, not at VA prices. So a guarantee fund was established of $100 million, and it was to be revolving. Investors immediately said, well, $100 million is just wonderful. But what assurance is there that $100 million is adequate as a guarantee fund? And I suppose about 9 or 10 years passed, at least in 1960, they started to overhaul the act. They were cognizant of the fact that it was just unworkable. It did nothing for the market commercial school. And 1962, they overhauled the act and did away with the guarantee fund absolutely, because it had not worked. And they came up with a new device that instead said that any school bond would be honored at the Office of State Treasury. Now, this was truly a state guarantee, you see. And that was fine as a recital on paper. One of the unfortunate things about it was that this went through as state statute instead of going through a new constitution. And raised a lot of suspicion as to why this was not a part of the state constitution, because this constitution dealt at length with school problems and school finance. And the market awaited a test case. One finally came. And finally now, Michigan school bonds trade with a credit floor of A rating. The guarantee fund of $100 million having been discarded and abandoned because it did not work. But the statutory recital that every school bond would be honored at the Office of the State Treasury has worked to a degree. It would have worked absolutely had that gone as a matter of referendum into the state constitution. It truly made every state school bond a general obligation to the state of Michigan. Then they'd have had something. But they just haven't been able to do the job right there, and they've been tinkering with it for 15 years. But if the Michigan experience means anything, it would indicate to me that a guarantee fund is not necessarily working.
Just if I get what you're at now, and I'm like Senator Phillips, I'd like to do something yesterday that improves it today. Let's just assume that this state sets up a permanent fund of some $600 million. And there's a withdrawal of that provision. We'll go through this constitutionally, take it to a vote of the people, you know, all of them by referendum. And we're going to say that 5% of that fund comes back into the treasury every year of the state. However, if any state obligation or general obligation of one of its political subdivisions shall be in default, that money first shall go, or whatever portion is necessary that we're withdrawing, to pick up the defaulted portion. Now, it's just about impossible to lose at least to the tune of $30 million a year from her.
Well, that's true. Now, you're going to do this in perpetuity, I assume.
Theoretically. Let's just assume that we are.
To be workable, you're almost going to have to do it in perpetuity. You're going to have to do it for a span of 30 years or something like that.
Right.
That would be the minimum amount of time, unless you want to start selling short-term bonds. And there's nothing wrong with doing that, except it's going to drag your tax rates up on ad valorem taxes. I think what you're doing is this, as I understood your hypothesis, this is going to go to the people and they're going to vote it, which means it could be a general obligation to the state. To start with, the bonds would be a general obligation, I assume.
No.
The responsibility and the liability of the state in making good would be a general obligation.
Right.
Well, aren't you saying, in effect, that the general obligation pledge of the state of Alaska is meaningless, and it's so meaningless that we have to put the money up besides to prove to you that it's good?
No.
Well, you're saying that.
You're saying that. Now, what I'm trying to find out is this, that if we decide as a policy, the people of this state, that instead of spending all the $900 million, we're just going to put $600 million aside, and we're going to use the income and let it, you know, flow back to us from whatever investments we choose to make. All I'm saying is that if we put a provision in this also, that the 5% withdrawal feature that we have to the state, you know, back into the general fund, out of the trust fund every year, if the people approve a provision whereby that money goes first to pay any defaulted municipal political subdivision debt as well as state that hasn't been paid in due course. Now, if everybody's current, the money goes into the general fund.
Well,
let's do
fine.
Anything to us right now.
That would have an immediate effect if you set up the mechanics whereby the fund would be replenished as you had to draw down.
What we're assuming that's going to make at least
5% of investment that you would, yes. I would suspect if that were set up along those lines and plugged up all the holes on it, that would have an immediate effect.
All the way down the line, you think, into the political subdivisions also?
Well, as far as the political subdivisions are concerned, yes, you're going to, in effect, guarantee all of their debt from that fund. I think from the standpoint of the preservation of the integrity of that fund, in perpetuity, the state is going to have to step in a very paternalistic way and examine every financing of its subdivisions from the standpoint of feasibility. I think that should be a part of this.
You could say that if any political subdivision bond is to come under this, that they must get an okay from the state.
Yes, indeed. I think that you should be looking over their shoulders and exercising the right to approve or disapprove.
Senator, I don't know whether or not Representative Board finished his questions.
Well, all I'm getting at is if we did that, and we'll just take your $600 million, we know that we're going to be pulling out a minimum of $5 million a year, and it's inconceivable that we're not going to have a return somewhat in excess of that and some capital appreciation, at least as far as I'm concerned. Now, that's once these mechanics are set up, which could theoretically be done, you know, well within a year's time, have you any idea, would you hazard any kind of a guess, what in percentage, in ratings, difference it might make to us?
Bear in mind that this is not, to my knowledge, has been done in the past, so we can't draw on historical analogy. Assuming that this were to be done so that it would be absolutely workable, in theory there'd be no holes in it, I would suspect that immediately it could save you 0.75%, something like that. So, I don't ask you to defend that because, as I say, we have no historical precedent for it. But I suspect that it would certainly realize immediate benefits. And bear in mind that it takes a good deal of time to educate the investor Perhaps it's going to take 2 or 3 years to get him fully educated to this, but you should realize an immediate benefit here. We'll say 0.5 to 0.75%, but over a longer period of time, you might realize more. But we're assuming a perfect vehicle here.
Senator Rader, you finished?
I think you said earlier that the bond credit rating is similar to an individual's credit rating. Now, for example, one of the things that I observe is that my banker will loan me more money if I have more assets and less debts.
That's correct. The same is true with the state or any one of its subdivisions.
Another thing that my banker likes is for me to get out of the bank once a year. Any similarity in the bond market that you don't like to see us too often?
That is true. unless you're of tremendous size, as the state of California, the state of New York, we can own 4 times a year or something like that. Ideally, for a state of this size, it should be more than twice a year. There's not a lot to scarcity value in bonds, as you realize. Part of the trouble with the city of New York and borrowing money, and it's borrowing money at almost the same identical cost as the state of Alaska. Even though it has lots of tangible resources, it has tremendous problems, as you alluded to. But its biggest problem is that it has flooded the market with New York City bonds to the point that most every investment portfolio in the country has New York City bonds in it. And investors like to diversify. What it means is the city wants to borrow more money recurrently. In order to get investors that already have a load of city bonds in their portfolio, they have to offer them an exorbitant amount of yield to make the bonds attractive enough to buy. And part of your problem here may be in that area. That in terms of your resources, you have a lot of debt. So you've got to do things to make your investment attractive, preferably not to give the investor more yield, but to strengthen your credit.
Well, another thing, I don't want to go to a banker. He wants to know that roughly, you know, what I'm going to do in the future years, my ability to pay, like in our capital improvement program. Now, if we adopted a capital improvement program, 20 years to me seems to be almost impossible to grow in a state like this to make it meaningful, but even 10 years. And if we were, for a period of several years, we even chose to pay for it out of our own money, we'd be decreasing our future capital needs. And from my banker viewpoint, it would enhance my situation with him. Because the next time I went back in a couple years later, I would have more assets. I would have taken care of more of my future needs, and my debt would not have gone up.
That's very true.
So to that extent, that would be favorable towards a better credit rating. Now if, let me ask one other question. We heard previously that a municipality's bond rating is limited to some extent by the bond rating of the state in which it's located. So, for example, the municipality couldn't expect to get a better rating than the state has. Is that a true statement?
No. Well, it so happens, I guess, as a matter of practice, that there are relatively few states whose major cities' credit rating is higher than the state's credit rating. Charleston, West Virginia enjoys AA, whereas the state of West Virginia enjoys A rating. So Charleston, West Virginia is higher than the state's because Charleston has had better management.
Would that be common? Generally, the city rating is higher.
Well, it's generally uncommon, but one can't make the statement implicitly that a subdivision can't have a higher rating than the state because it can't.
Okay. Now then, if for some other reason, other than the bond reason, we decided to put up a sinking fund for our current indebtedness, and let's say we didn't sell any bonds immediately, would those bonds in
to protect outstanding debt, then you would probably come up with a AAA rating on the outstanding debt, because you'd have escrow money, you see. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that's what would happen.
Senator Rader,
Yeah, I'm just going to say the same thing. We've already sold those bonds. We wouldn't get the benefit of the AAA rating on that, would we?
No, it wouldn't do you any good.
I perhaps if you decided to do some other reason.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the sale we have proposed for $11.5 million on March 4th?
No, I'm not.
Even not being familiar with it, it calls for either 5-year or 10-year, two proposals, general obligations for 11.5. But do you have any idea what those would sell for?
Well, I assume that both issues would be non called.
That's correct. Right. That's correct. Right.
Well, let's talk about net interest cost of in the neighborhood of 540 on your 5 and 580 on your 10. Of course, that depends, you know, upon how your bond materials are set up, whether it's equal annual payments or whether it's weighted so that most of it comes due in 8, 9, and 10 years. But we'll just assume it's on equal annual payments. It would be somewhere between, you know, 540 to 580.
Okay.
In
today's market?
In today's market. Well, actually, what we're looking at is last week's market. As of yesterday, there hadn't been much in the way of bond sales. We have a client selling $36 million today, which would be the biggest issue coming to market this week. I haven't heard just what they did. They sold an hour ago, I guess. 2 hours ago.
This 20-year long-range planning, is it your opinion that that is feasible for this state, even though we are in a state of flux here, that we can project reasonably a 20-year plan?
Well, as one of the members of the group pointed out here, the further you get out, of course, the less accurate it is. I think that you have to set up long-range objectives. And, of course, you're going to keep updating and revising your program on an annual basis. It's going to be very meaningful from the standpoint of very near-term objectives. It should be quite meaningful on a 5-year basis.
This would be all public improvements, roads, airports, docks, transportation, communication, schools.
Yes. And of course, bear in mind that you're going to have some projects which would be probably financed with the equivalent of corporate tax exempt bonds. In the instance of docks, they might be obligations that would be guaranteed by a specific industry and so on. But
now, are those plans generally put together by in-house planners, or is it do you generally hire a nationally recognized firm for something like that, or what do you do?
Well, that depends upon the capability of your in-house competencies as to whether you use your own or whether you call in someone from the outside to work with your own people.
From the point of view of selling your bonds, though, well, I suppose the national name would be some assistance.
Oh,
that's really important.
It dresses it up, yes. And I think in the final analysis, you should have it examined by a nationally recognized firm.
You need to develop your house expertise, though, in order to constantly revise.
Yes, you do. You should be doing this internally because who knows better the needs of the state of Alaska than the people of Alaska and their government? You don't want to call in an engineering firm from Cambridge, Massachusetts to decide just what you need because as outsiders, they're not going to understand the problem as clearly as you do.
What kind of money would we be talking about, you think? We're talking about, assuming that we have a very minimal state planning staff at the time, several men, what kind of money are we talking about? What kind of staff have we had to create? What kind of time frame are we talking about to develop this type of plan, which you think would be a long-range benefit to us?
Well, I don't know what you've done already, and I can't believe that you haven't done a lot of this already. You must have very meaningful beginnings on this, because here you are coming to market and borrowing funds semi-annually at least. You're doing this now. I don't know what the quality of it is. I have no means of gauging that, but there's no doubt what you have in-house competence now.
Well, it's hard for me to describe to you so that you wouldn't know. I don't really know either, particularly. Give us an outside and an inside estimate as to what we're talking about here in terms of funding such a study?
Well, it's a difficult question because I have no idea just what you have here. I don't know how many man hours would have to be put in bringing things up to date. I'm not like to come upon the confidence of your own people in assisting anybody that comes in to do a study. So that I wouldn't have any idea whether we're talking about $50,000 or $250,000. It could very, very broadly.
The
president, no.
The president of the Senate here, whose judgment I highly respect, suggested that our competence is zero at the present time.
I say we have no plan.
We have no plan. Then what would your estimate be?
Even that's true, you shouldn't have
anything. Oh, hell, he's going to change the rating anyway.
It's well, I don't. Fortunately, I don't rate your bonds anymore. I got out of that business. And
I'm glad you did. I hope your successors do better by us. Couldn't do any worse.
I really wouldn't. I don't think anyone to give any kind of a competent answer would have to work with your various departments, your Department of Highway and so on.
There's been a suggestion that the state should, say, take $500 million and put it into a perpetual fund, and then instead of, in other words, buying our capital improvements, that we'll issue bonds for our capital improvements. The idea being that we'll pay less for the money than what the $500 million would produce in investments in the stock market, and the tax-free nature of our issued bonds gives us an edge there. Is that going to, what effect would that have on our bond rating, if any? Whether or not we set up such a fund. In other words, we can either invest in the stock market and issue bonds, or else we could just go pay for an airport.
I think it's going to have probably a rather intangible effect because it's something that you're going to do on a one-shot basis. It's something that you can't continue. Well, I shouldn't say that. Perhaps you'll have another jackpot here sometime in the near future. We don't know. But let's assume that it's just a one-shot proposition. It's going to have an intangible effect. It's going to be beneficial in that it's going to command new respect. But the whole question, I think, is going to be in the minds of investors whether you hit the jackpot once and how judiciously you handled your money, or whether this would be the beginning of a concerted policy, and it's to be a policy where then they've got to see that you've got the wherewithal to do this on a sustained basis. I will point out something that you're certainly well aware of, and that is that knowing that you've had a windfall, everybody is going to be looking over your shoulders to see just how judiciously you handle it. And I certainly wouldn't envy you in your position here, because you're not going to make everyone happy. You're going to have critics, as you well realize, regardless of what you do and how judiciously you attempt to handle it.
To summarize at least my understanding, it is my understanding that you do not recommend, however, that we set up or tie up, in perpetuity or otherwise, $100 million or any particular amount in order to guarantee either our own bonds or the bonds of our subdivisions. Period. That's not your
well,
that's not your recommendation.
It's not my recommendation for this reason, that no one has been able to do that successfully up to the present time. That isn't to say that you can't do it successfully, or to say that anyone can't do it successfully. But it has never been successful. And as the state grows, well, of course, it's very possible that the size of that fund is going to have to grow proportionately, and I point out that you're going to have to set up this sort of a device almost in perpetuity and convince the investor that it's going to be here in perpetuity, and that the fund can't be invaded, and that as you draw down on it, that it's going to be replenished. Its integrity can't be violated. And looking at that from a long-term point of view, I only raise the question of whether the people of Alaska are getting the best return on that use of the money. And I'm not smart enough to answer that question, but that's one that you're going to have to answer for yourselves.
We do end up, though, that nobody's done it yet successfully, in your view.
That is true. I don't believe that anyone has done it successfully today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Senator. Mr. Real, the gentleman on my left is Representative Guest, who is my co-chairman. He chairs the House Light Committee. He has a question.
Mr. Real, in your 20-year plan, you mentioned, do you speak just of capital improvements or general governmental functions? For instance, with the position of education in Alaska, would it be something we'd want in this 20-year plan? Hamlet's estate function, education from Head Start through 2 years of college. Are you just speaking of capital improvements?
No, I was speaking in terms only of capital improvements. One would assume that you certainly have an enlightened government here, and you're going to keep pace with the standards of state government in the United States, and we'll move along progressively. In fact, you may leave. But we weren't thinking from the standpoint of operations, but from the standpoint of capital program alone.
Thank you. One further question. You mentioned earlier per capita debt. Perhaps I'm incorrect. I thought that was rather an antiquated way of judging things anymore, wouldn't I? A gross state product, for instance, would be a better judge of our potential to pay debt.
The art, if you want to call it that, of municipal credit analysis has not been too enlightened, has not progressed too quickly. Investors are wed to the old yardsticks of per capita debt and relating debt to resources and various ratios. No one has really come up with new yardsticks. New yardsticks are needed very desperately. We've got to do a lot in improving the techniques of credit analysis. Something I'm very interested in. But right at the present time, you've got to live with those old yardsticks and hope that you can wean the investor away from them within a moderately short period of time. But the investor needs to be educated. So as I talk about financial-public relations, I'm inferring there that that's one of the things that you're going to have to overcome.
With the committee, I'd like to ask Mr. Real a question or two. There is no objection. Mr. Real, I think I can speak for Senator Phillips and perhaps for the other members of both committees. You devoted a great deal of your time today to Senate Bill 452, which is the Alaska Municipal Bond Authority, and you found fault with it, at least to an extent. I'm wondering if I, on behalf of the Joint Committees, could impose upon you to take some of your valuable time when you return to New York and verse, book, and chapter. Tell us what you think we should do with the bill. That is, on page X, at such and such a line or a paragraph, what should come out, how it should be modified, amended, changed, deleted, or what have you. We realize it's an imposition, but I think your guidance would be very helpful to us.
I'd be very glad to do it. As I say, I'm not criticizing the bill in terms of its concept and so on. I think it's fine, but I think that there are certain things that should be done to really make it effective.
Well, we would certainly welcome your suggestions.
I'll be glad to hear some suggestions.
Are there any further questions from the committee? Well, once again, sir, we do thank you for having come such a long way.
Well, I thank you for this audience, and I always enjoy coming to Alaska. Look forward to it.
I'd like to ask a question.
You're certainly welcome, Senator.
I get the feeling that we're in an awful hurry up here to do something, and I get the idea from the way you talk that you probably are not in as big a hurry as we are. Don't you think that that we could? I don't mean we shouldn't be working at this, but I don't think we're going to change that bond rating overnight. Is it that pressing?
Well, it's pressing that it be done overnight. But in terms of doing it overnight or doing it yesterday, it's physically impossible.
Well, why is it so pressing?
Because you have got to convince the investor who has been buying state of Alaska bonds and territory of Alaska bonds now for three decades that Alaska has come of age. It's done some sophisticated planning, and it has set up machinery, perhaps, if you want to go this way, that is going to protect and enhance the integrity of all of the obligations that are emanating from the state. Those things can't be done overnight. You've got any number of ways you can go on reaching a solution to this problem. They all have strengths and weaknesses. I think that you have a tremendous responsibility here right now in deciding just what your point of departure is going to be and what path you're going to take. It's an awesome responsibility, and I think the alternatives are so complicated that it just precludes you doing it in a hurry. And depending upon the solution that you seek, you're going to have to determine whether it's one that's going to give you immediate short-term relief, one that's going to give you long-term relief, one that's going to give you immediate benefits, and one that's going to give you benefits that you're going to begin to realize over a period of time gradually and progressively.
Well, I think I can buy most of what you say, but I still feel that that our position isn't as critical as we might think it is. We're not going to change what's already happened, are we?
You can't change past history, and from the standpoint of being critical, it is not critical. You are going to be able to continue to borrow funds and tax exempt market, and it's just a matter of paying more for those funds than you should be paying for.
But you're assuming that we have to borrow money.
You don't have to borrow money at all. As you pointed out this afternoon, you can go on a current basis if you so elect.
Well, we could for a year.
Yes. And that's one of your alternatives.
Mr. Chairman, this is sort of a simpleton question, but if you took only these facts, you say we need to convince the investor of our stability or so on and so forth. What would the effect be, this fact standing alone, if we increased our royalty tax this session as one alternative, standing by itself? The other alternative, that we cut our personal income tax.
You mean severance tax, John?
No, personal income tax.
Oh, you said increase the royalty tax?
Increase your severance tax, excuse me. Yes, increase your severance tax, which in effect would produce a much larger income, so to speak, off the North Slope. If we did that fact, how would you crank it in? Would it be a plus or minus? If we cut our income tax, personal income tax, would that be a plus or minus? Or if we did nothing, in other words, they expect us to do something, how would they, well, if you can answer my question, just as to which way those would be indicators as to us convincing investors that we're reasonable group of people.
All I can really do is give you my own opinion, as you realize. I think that we're going to be expected to use this money judiciously. And I warn you against using the money to give the taxpayer immediate tax relief as a political practicality. And I'm not accusing you of considering that at all. I don't know that you are.
I suggest it.
But I think from the standpoint of building the investment credit statute, I think that would be followed.
Tax relief,
in effect. Tax relief, as it was worked out in Michigan beginning in 1955 and right up to the present, did an awful lot to erode their credit position, which was just beginning to recover from their folly in the 30s, and they just repudiated debt. So that Michigan today still has not lived down debt repudiation in the 30s. They haven't built any confidence at all. The legislature in two concurrent sessions we've used to appropriate, and you remember the fight Governor Williams had at the legislature. But they used money there to grant tax relief. I think that would be one of the worst things you could do here. But that's just my own opinion.
How about the increasing our severance tax?
Doubling it.
Well, say doubling or increasing it somewhat. How would that be taken?
I would imagine that that would be well received, so long as you're not getting your tax wholly out of proportion with as other states treat the mineral industry. And there again, it's just a hypothesis. You don't want to get it up to an onerous rate, onerous level.
If it were no greater than Texas or California or Louisiana?
Perfectly fine.
One more question, Mr. Chairman, if I might. What if we declared a 2-year moratorium on the sale of additional oil lands and leases, with whatever that might imply? Question, is that a hostile act? Is that a non-business land? Or is that an act of people who are trying to digest and handle what they've got before they sell more? Or
I was going to say that insofar as you can justify that, giving you the time to digest and the plan, well, I would think that would be perfectly acceptable.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman. Regarding this tax relief, we see a method of tax relief called revenue sharing. And we started it last year, and it will be probably expanded this year, whereby the state will appropriate a substantial amount back to the local communities for the purpose of retiring debt on school construction or construction of sewers and water treatment, this type of thing, capital improvements as well as some services. Now, would you apply your advice on not giving tax relief equally to this? The way we give tax relief, of course, is to relieve the local property tax payers by the state picking up, say, 50% of the debt service on school building construction and on sewer and water plants and things like that. Would you suggest that in your statement about giving tax relief, do you think this is not a good practice?
No, I wouldn't criticize that at all.
Okay. That's all I have.
Any further questions?
What is your return schedule?
I have no return schedule, whatever. So,
Mr. Real, just getting off the plane, these questions are all hitting pretty fast. I'm wondering if a session tomorrow would be perhaps more fruitful if he's still going to be here, having passed it and sniff around a little bit.
The big trick is to get away from New York, and once you make the break, get away from the office. Just trying to kind of luxuriate in it, so I'm not hurrying that. I don't plan to see them until Monday.
Well, would you like to resume and think overnight about what you've had for the last of the day and meet tomorrow at 1:30?
Good time.
I certainly would like to. I think that
the real would not be agreeable with
you. That's fine. Is there anything that you want me to cogitate on in the meantime?
Well, I'll give you a couple more bills.
Take a look at 404 as an example on our latest one. That would be a good idea.
I've got it right here. We'll terminate today then. We'll recess. We'll reconvene tomorrow at 1:30 in this room. I'd like the Senate members to stick around for a moment, please.
I think a lot of it is based on their knowledge of Alaska, which is limited in New York. Well, a lot of it's opinion, too. I think that you were you can't tell me that we had a BAA rating before the $900 million sale and we got one afterwards and things are the same because they're not the
same.
Because we got a big state and you can't.
Well, all the reasons. Until I talk to the other one, I'm going to read the paper.
But that makes it down.